children and animals. All these issues basically they cover the, you know, what we've been talking about for the last 2 days. And I do not know whether people have prepared questions here on the panel that we want to open up to, or issues that we want to open up to.
Well, I'd like to bring up one thing. I'd like to talk about some of the things that Florida has done in terms of working with the pet and reptile community to improve our stewardship of not only our animals, but our impact on the environment. And I know that PJAC has a person that's very, very central to that. And I'd like to go ahead and start with Scott Hardin. Scott, what you were involved in Florida in a number of programs. Can you tell us about some of the programs you were working with in terms of reptiles?
Yeah, I was the exotic species coordinator for the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission. And that position actually didn't exist until 2004. We reorged, you know, we knew that in government, and the stakeholders said, you're not doing enough with exotics. So I had been dealing with exotic fish for most of my career. This got me into a whole lot of other things. And as I progressed through this, I worked very closely with Linda Harrison and some of the other good folks in law enforcement. We looked at what was going on. We realized that we had a lot of regulations. We might have needed a few more, but most of all, what we needed was to maintain a good relationship with the industry that we had. So maybe one of the programs that we started that seems to have gotten some attention was when we were anticipating putting regulations on birds. We knew it was coming. We knew we had some people out there with some Burmese pythons, and we knew that in the past, when there have been regulations, particularly federal regulations, there have been cases where a lot of things showed up all of a sudden. People dumped them, people didn't understand the law, it was too complicated. Some people will never understand the law, period. So we started the pet amnesty program. And we did that, again, to give people an option to releasing animals into the wild. That was a program where if you found yourself with an unpermitted animal, you come to one of our events and you can hand it over, no questions asked. Now, people didn't believe that for a whole lot. But bit by bit, we've got some credibility there. As it's turned out, most of the animals that are surrendered are not animals that are illegal. We get a few of those, a few burns, a few rejects, things like that. But a lot of them are the circumstances that we've heard about earlier. People who the child moved away. Their circumstances changed. They got a divorce, whatever. So don't link it to us. And I didn't want to answer of all of the animals that have been turned in at our events, FWC's events, of the 600 or so, two have been euthanized at veterinarians' advice. So what I think that has done is that has reinforced the relationship that we have with the people. A couple of other things I didn't want to mention. While I was still there, we started an organization called the Florida Reptile and Amphibian Association. And it is open to anybody who wants to be supportive of husbandry and conservation of reptiles and amphibians in Florida. That includes membership of veterinarians, hobbyists, breeders, headquarters, exhibitors, you name it. And this is a non-political organization. It's one of those, you know, let's float all the boats. Let's observe good management practices. Let's educate people. Let's try and avoid. Let's be proactive. As a partial regulator with the Fish and Wildlife Commission, I came to realize I can only do so much with rules, that I can do an awful lot by finding voluntary clients from the industry and the hobby community and offer food. I say it became obvious to me that most people wanted to do the right thing.
Okay.
There were plenty of work that would love to do it if only they had guys. So I hope that we can come to a successful conclusion with the organization and head off a lot of the things that lead to government intervention that is always going to have little effect in this involvement.
Sorry, I'm going to ask Gerald a question.
That was too long a speech for this, so I'll just stop there.
Well, I mean, I think what you're pointing to is the kind of proactive efforts that when government and the public see from the industry puts us in a position of credibility and facilitates, puts us in less of a defensive position when we've got potential regulatory or legislative issues facing us. Yeah.
I was actually part of the industry group that Scott's people met with, and I can tell you that many things happened because of that. Of course, the cooperation relationship was first, and that was great. Industry got a heads up. Industry can now start shifting and recognizing what was coming down the road. We met in Tallahassee with Fish and Game. Industry met Tallahassee with Fish and Game many years before this last federal regulation came into being. So we knew a long time ahead. Everybody really got the message. Get it right, get it caged up right, and if possible, get on to the next species that's better for the industry and better for the state. And that made a huge difference, too.
I wanted to add one more thing. We did, by the way, work with Mark and them. We if you're talking about Richard Sliders here, Greater Sliders are not native to Florida, except perhaps in the extreme northwest panhandle. So they've been introduced there like everywhere else. But we still have some lady yellow-bellied sliders, that subspecies. And so we went ahead and put Greater Sliders on the conditional species list, which takes them out of personal possession, but it allows dealers to maintain animals as long as they qualify as security. At the time, it was going to be lock, stock, and barrel, all Greater Sliders. You're done. But Mark and some others came to us and pointed out that there is a trait in albinos and a melanistic and other aberrant color patterns that are just different animals altogether. They're not your giveaway, your dumb store pet turtle, and they're not likely to survive, they're not likely to be exposed. So we worked with them and we came up with an exception to the rule for that. So we kind of wanted to have some flexibility. But the other thing, Florida is, we are tainted, if you will, by a lot of history. We have so many exotic species out there. We have some very prominent ones. So people's perception outside of the industry is a horror story in many cases. You guys experience it from day to day. I always would say, there's a lot of good that comes out of owning exotic pets. There's a lot of conservation education that can go on that I don't think has been fully taken advantage of. And one of the things that we worry about in Florida still, even though I'm not with the government, we worry that we have such an urbanized state and that we're losing our kids' connection with nature. And in some cases, I believe the best way we can get them out there is to get a pet in their hands. It could be a native pet, but we now know there's downsides to that. So properly managed, I really do think we can fully better exploit having children get a non-native animal, be it a reptile, an amphibian, or something else, and let that be a pathway for larger conservation issues across the board.
Yep, I agree 100%. The point I'm making when I introduce this session about this spectrum of rights versus social interests is because I think that anybody, take any issue, but specifically the pet industry, when we take kind of an extreme right position and we're defensive about any issue that comes up, we marginalize our position in responding to it. And when we do what these folks are talking about in terms of being proactive and working with government to address these issues, you're going to be far more effective and you're going to alleviate the kind of extreme response that might otherwise be imposed on you. And PJAC has long taken the attitude that you got to respond obviously to something that's extreme and that's going to put you out of business, but you also ought to be proactive in trying to address concerns that raise legitimate reasons for regulation. I don't know if people in here remember the Safe Rex poster that we did with CDC some years ago. It's an award-winning poster that we did with CDC, so we got both government and industry name on the poster. It was a cartoon thing that was so well received that we had kids that would walk into pet stores and see it and call us and ask. The parents would call us to ask to get copies of the poster. We had schools asking to copies of this poster, libraries asking to copies of the poster. And the whole message of the poster was, look, reptiles are fine. Reptile ownership is fine. Just be smart about it. I think you're the one that was talking about proper handling practices. Okay, that's what it's Safe Rex is reptile handling practices. That's what it's all about. Making sure that you're not doing foolish things like sitting there with your reptile while you're making dinner in the kitchen. I mean, just common sense stuff. But we were using the CDC recommendations, recommended approaches, putting that in a poster that's attractive to kids, and we happen to know for a fact that that poster was directly responsible for preventing some burdensome restrictions on sale and ownership of reptiles in various states. As a matter of fact, there are some states that actually adopted the poster as a requirement in lieu of imposing more severe restrictions on sale or ownership. The Habits Attitude program, which somebody mentioned yesterday, yes, Sue did. So that's a joint effort between industry and government, Interior and NOAA. Another very well-received program to help educate people about releasing things into the wild, or I should say not releasing things into the wild. Again, by being proactive, helping to educate the public and head off if we didn't do something about it, head off what could instead end up biting us in the rear end. So from an industry standpoint, I think the smartest thing we can do, and really people have been talking about this for 2 days, is to recognize the existence of these legitimate concerns that society has, to impose reasonable regulation and restrictions, and to respond in a positive fashion and work with them to facilitate appropriate and good solutions rather than what might otherwise be going overboard.
And I would add to that, these dialogues are really good at getting things going to know who to talk to. And I know that some of these regulations may rank the people that we need to. What do you mean I can't go do that? I think you have the problem that we have in terms of rapidly developing country. I come from a rapidly developing state where activities that might have been fine 25 years ago don't work quite as well because of all the modest habitat structure. And so in many cases, there are absolutely solid foundations for some of these issues. Some of them have uncertainty, but I say, educate yourselves too. Call the agency, take the time, find out what the science is behind it. Discuss the science. If you have a different point of view, no government person should be unwilling to listen if you carry on a civil war. But don't just accept things. It takes a little bit of work. There's a tremendous amount of information you can find on the internet now about the scientific foundation behind a lot of conservation decisions.
Any other comments from the panel?
I don't think you can have a discussion about keeping reptiles ethics without broaching the animal rights issue.
Well, it's not just coming. I mean, it's here.
Yeah, but what can we do as a community to defend the work of that?
Yeah, and I think that, okay, so what you pointed to when you're talking about animal rights extremists is the other end of that spectrum, okay? On the one end, you got people who say, my reptile is I own it. I can do what I want with it. It's nobody else's business. All right? That's the extreme position. On the other extreme is an animal is a living being, has individual rights. You don't have any right to use it for any purpose. All right? And that's the other extreme. You don't have the right to wear it. You don't have the right to eat it. You don't have the right to keep it as a pet because that's equivalent to slavery. That's the other extreme in the spectrum, right? And I think that in answer to your question, what we've been trying to do is take the more rational position to make it obvious how extreme that animal rights position is. So when we're talking to regulators, legislators, and policymakers, we go in there and say, look, animal welfare is a critical issue. People do have a right to animal ownership. People do have a right to keep pets. People do have a right to agricultural and other uses for animals. But that doesn't mean that we don't also have an obligation as a society to preserve and advance humane treatment and welfare of animals. And so again, we're moving ourselves towards the middle of that spectrum where we say, look, we're recognizing rights, but we're also recognizing responsibility. And that's what ethics comes down to. And there is no way we're going to successfully battle organizations that have hundreds of millions of dollars to spend on public advertising to talk about how horrible it is to take animals out of the wild, how every puppy sold in the commercial pet industry comes from a puppy mill, and all this propaganda and rhetoric, okay? We're not going to raise that kind of money to battle them in that kind of arena, right? But we can respond to policymakers and legislators and regulators by taking a rational stance on these issues, and I think that's our... Yes, ma'am?
There's a lot of ways that you guys can do it. There's a lot of ways that every single person in here that knows about that can do it. And the first thing I want to clarify is there's animal welfare and there's animal rights. There's a huge disconnect. And I'm assuming, because this is something that reptiles people are very well aware of, Humane Society is part of the HSUS, not PETA. The Local Humane Society is animal welfare. Reptile rescues are animal welfare. Dogs and cat rescues, they want the best for the animal. They don't want to take them away. And it's never going to end. The pit bull people have been fighting the animal rights and PETA for longer than the reptile people have. The purebred dog people have been doing it. It's never going to end. What we need to do is get smarter. We don't need to just send people money. Everyone, I raised the challenge, what was that, Jeff, a year ago to everyone?
Yep.
To take 1 hour a month. Take your ball python, take your leopard gecko, take whatever, and give your butt to a pet. Talk about your pets. I can't do it alone. Tina can't do it alone. I'm quite sure she does it with the rescue work too, because that's how one of our big ways to advertise in our animals. Go out and tell people why they're important to you. People, when we were fighting the law in Daytona, the biggest impact was a 17-year-old girl with a leopard gecko. Leopard geckos were not on the law, but she got up there and started crying. Thinking of the impact of taking pythons over 8 feet away from people, and thinking of what it would feel like to lose her pet leopard gecko. And I know the reptile community as a whole has this issue with the word pet, but realistically, these are our pets. Yes, we may be raising to breed them, you know, but owning a collection makes it so much more personal. Get out there and start using the word pet and showing people who have never had an experience with reptiles. Most of these people only see them in the zoo. Get your butts off your couches and away from your website and Facebook and do it once a month for 1 hour. You will make an impact on your local area against your animal rights.
I have a scenario with you. I don't have a shirt on. We support autism kids. My nephew has autism. The day that I opened my store, he spent time in our aquatic department and our snake department and our reptile department. That's why Sumit is my help. But what I'm trying to say is that I have proof by, and I'm going to cry here, but my little nephew, and I can show you proof of it. My shirt has autism on it, and we wear it all the time. That I get done with my professor. I take my kid to their school, and I have field trips. I open late at 11 o'clock in the morning. Girl Scouts come and get their badges, okay? I also go to every single school there. I reached out to the community. I'm not Pittsburgh, I'm a family-owned business, and we're Yes. And you know what? It has made such a huge difference in the community because we're educating kids. Again, Mr. Harvey, he says, you know, we're taking kids away. What are they doing? Videotapes. Instead of, hey, you know what? I need a pet. I need to take care of them. I want the responsibility. And that is what I'm doing. I know I'm little, but I'm trying to do that. My nephew was done his last MRI in his head. He has done 360-degree change.
Well, and it doesn't matter how little you are. If each person, if each person that came to King's Nick and read that blog post and said, yeah, actually did it, they would have been insane. Because I've had hundreds of thousands of kids. I've had four people tell me they went out and did it. We need more than four people. Reptile people are introverted on the general whole, and we're paranoid. We're afraid of what people are going to say. You can't do that anymore. You have to get off your butts. Because otherwise, all of the propaganda that is put out by the animals people is what people are seeing. They aren't seeing the other side of the story. They aren't seeing you with your ball python named Fluffy. And let me tell you, if you don't have a name, Fluffy, Spot, and Grover are amazing. They go look at wonderful. And I don't care if you have 300 of them. Call them your pets, not your collection. It's all about how we say it, and who we say it to, and what we do. And you can use, there's so many things, from going hunting and getting fit, to saving species, and talking about conservation programs. I go out with my grandkids and blue hybrid all the time, and talk about birds with the iguanas and IRCF. I go out with my adoptable animals and explain, you know, people, there are rescues for everything, not just dogs and cats. You don't have to buy them here. If we don't have it, we'll send you to a good breeder. Network with your local readers, but get out there and talk to the public. That is the biggest way that we can combat AI.
Yep.
My comment is it's really along the same lines as you as well as what you said. You can educate the public if you want to reach the parents, which is a great way. They will bring information home. So if you want the parents to be aware of something, you talk to the public school, get advice. But you also have to realize that children can engage their parents, but they're not reliable to some of their expectations. So you need to provide, in addition to reading the state, you need to provide literature or a resource for
reference. Every public school, I said this right away, they're giving $100 to the science teacher right now to go spend in your textbook. And it's just an application that you take to the science teacher, and they love your pieces. And it's something that you're getting something in return, but yet you're getting this through. They're buying a product from you, and they're getting all the information and the science.
And once you sign up, gave everything before you go off. And they then, when you get back, stop to just use things.
I think the bottom line here is that everybody that keeps reptiles needs to consider themselves a reptile ambassador to the rest of the world. Because, like I said earlier, legislators and regulators, they own a lot of cars. They know how to regulate and legislate cars and car ownership and driver's licenses. They don't own a lot of reptiles. They don't have a lot of knowledge on those reptiles. And we're not going to be able to give everybody the knowledge, but we need to be out there giving as many people as we can that knowledge. And we need to show them that reptile keepers are ethical keepers. We're concerned about not only our pets, but the environment. We're concerned about habitat destruction, conservation. We're concerned about a whole array of things that are things they're concerned about too. And just because I own a Bernese python or a iguana doesn't really make me that strange. It just makes me a little bit different. And
you're strange all aside.
we'll have to get to beside that. But long story short, we are the reptile ambassadors. We're the ambassadors from our community to the mainstream community, and we need to remember that. And every time
everybody's hand went up and you see the screens.
Every time you do something positive, you may not see it, but it gets out there. People know about it. People hear about it. Every time you do something negative, people know about it and it gets out there.
Yeah, I just wanted to kind of bring me to what I wanted to say, actually.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. But I think, last time I checked, it is still a democratic country. And so public opinion counts for almost everything. 60% of the population say you can't have reptiles, and that's a reptile. And so, for me, being extreme, I think we should get away from being extreme and try to become mainstream. And there are a lot of things that we do as a group, a small part of our industry, that give us bad names. And I think, first of all, as a reptile keeper and lover, we should follow all laws. And that's really vital, especially as a reptile lover. And I've seen so many people here, break law and talk about them, and they say they're reptile lovers. And I think what he said is very important. Every one of us become an ambassador. Matter to what we love. And we really need to become mainstream and convince other populations that this is not something that's extreme, and this is something that, normal people like us do. And we really, it's really about public opinion and how we're going to change that opinion toward us. And we're not going to fight the criminals. They're going to do what they want to do, and we have to do what we have to do. Convince other people to say, hey, reptile is not bad. And I think that's the most important thing.
Well, I do tattooed on 50% of my body, you all don't see that. Take a point to make sure that, your pants aren't shredded, you aren't wearing, and I'm talking about how I know the address here, so if anyone takes offense, you aren't wearing a death metal t-shirt, your tattoos aren't showing. Make yourself look less threatening. I mean, anyone who's on my Facebook has seen photos of how I look when I go to my day to day. When I go out to reptile work, education, it's jeans, it's a pink t-shirt or a reader shirt or a CHS shirt or my rep t-shirt.
Or dress like Jeff.
Yeah, this, by the way, this is probably the last time for quite some time you'll see me in this suit.
But make that effort to look nicer if you're a tattooed couple, because that's still part of the image. Let's take away the tattooed biker image. I look at what I want to. I don't always want to. Make that effort to put yourself out there a little bit better. It's like a job interview. You can put it that way. Make a good first impression, because if someone has never had access to a reptile, and someone comes up to them, I come up to them in my shorts and my tattoos and my piercings and a camel corpse t-shirt, I say, hey, you want to wet my snake? Snake's going to be there, I'm going to think of it. Really. Make that effort, make yourself better.
You're talking about your first execution because of something you do.
Well, but what we need to do right now is take away that image.
So if the Jews didn't look like a Jew, then Hitler would have been all right?
Possibly. I never met him, so I can't tell you. But the whole thing is, these people who you're meeting, they never met a reptile person. And if they walk away with them, when they come back and say, we need phantom reptiles on this survey. And it sucks that they have to think that way, but you do. You're not just representing yourself. When you do that, you're representing everyone.
How that's why it to you. And if it's important enough to you, then you'll make that change, just like when you go to the bank to ask for a loan, or when you
exactly.
Go to your in-laws if you like them. And the point is, how important is it? How important is it to you? What are our best practices? Do we have best practices as an industry, as a group? Probably not, and we need that. And we talk about, and I'll probably get stuff thrown at me, we talk about the breeders, okay? Well, is there there a set standard on how, you know, what size shoebox and how dark the room and how many times you open your drawer? And is there best practices or something that belongs in every industry if we're talking about now being ambassadors to the world?
We have best management practices.
Yep.
We developed that about 10 years ago.
Yep.
And it's also not just for industry, but there's this different set written up for husbandry and for breeders as well, importers.
We spent a lot of hours in a room with a lot of folks.
I think PJAC has it on the website.
Oh, yeah, we got it on the website.
Yeah, the program is called the National Reptile Improvement Program, NREP. I'm sure a few people in here have heard it. I'm sure a lot of people in here haven't. But NREP was a program that was developed by the industry with people, a lot of people on this table, over 10 years ago. I flew to Florida several times to be involved in the NREP program. It's where I met Mark. And so we've been making those strides, and PJAC's done a lot to make a lot of those strides with the NREP program and the Have Attitude program, and they've got a new one, the BD-free program for Kittredge.
Yep.
So it's things like that are going to turn the edge. There's a lot of people out there that have no more respect for the animal rights organizations than we do, but we've got to give them a reason to support us. And so those are the things that give them reasons to support us.
Do we have some? And, yeah.
Well, but the poster you're talking about, that made a huge difference. It's the same thing as Harley Davidson. supply Harvey Davidson, our attorney, doctor, lawyer. If they go from California and right up to Texas, if we can meet them here. I mean, and if you see them in the Harvey Davidson, it's what people do. You know, it's kind of like, you know, it's the same thing as the reptile people. I mean, you guys are not, we're not mean, it's just that. It's just the post. So.
Yeah.
My comment was kind of right off of what Gina said. It's really easy for, you know, the news to pick on some horrible art, you know, something that goes on, they're like, oh, this kid got bit, or this happened, or this happened. And it's not easy to get those good stories out there. Just this past week, the Earth Society had an entire article in our book in the battalion, the Texas A&M paper, that had a picture of us out at the Texas Reds Festival showing kids about snakes. And I just, it about brought me to tears when I saw that article, because it was a good article about snakes, a good article about lizards, and kids going out there and teaching others about these animals. And it was so nice to see a positive article rather than there's Burmese pythons in the Everglades. So there's, you know,
that damn liberal media is not always against us.
Exactly. The good articles aren't the really interesting ones for everybody. They want to see a, you know, crazy news story.
I've got a story to relate.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Our job, all of us, is to teach these people
expect everybody in the country to start keeping ball pythons. Please, everybody in the country, start keeping ball pythons. But at the same time, if they're given a choice between a ban or reasonable regulation, what we should try for. I don't see any reason why they're going to be on our side. If they're pagans, they're pagans. There's nothing we can do about it. I'm not talking about being born. There's nothing we can do about it. They have their
opinion. 10 minutes.
You know, they're going to change their opinion. You know, I think we should be aware of what to do with their opinion.
Let's save that argument for a different one. Yeah.
We all know what needs to be done. And knowledge isn't necessarily power, it's the application of knowledge. So we know what needs to be done. We need to do it. We need to find the media. You talk about best practices. Well, we did that 10 years ago. Well, we need to get that in the hands of people. We need to get this information out there. We know what to do. We need to be able to do these things. And we need to get the people to rally behind these things.
Maybe we come up with a certification of some sort, like young children being certified as a reptile expert or a person of whatever it may be, and it could be something for the school system that we have as an industry or through organizations. Because people love to have a little title. I answer all these questions correctly. I took this course online, or I went to a seminar, and I'm talking about 3, 4, 5, probably the same thing they do for the Boy Scout, the Girl Scout, and things like that. You're so right on the application. Because we all know it, but we just, and the best way to empower people is to say, well, answer 10 questions. I don't know the answers to questions, but I've been keeping snakes for 50 years. I'm embarrassed to say that. And I'm going to go and plug into certain people in this room as I feel real uncomfortable that I'm this far along in my life and in collecting and there's things I didn't know. And should have known.
Yeah. Well, PJAC actually. PJAC actually.
And that's all that counts. There's more important things than that.
PJAC actually has certification programs for different groups of animals, just along the line of what you're talking about.
Probably, forgive me, just one last thing. I'm running out the door too, but probably I think many people that sit in these kind of seminars and lectures and groups assume that everybody knows what everybody else knows, and I think that what some of the things we said happen online here, this exists there, whatever it may be, I think that maybe we should repeat those things as often as possible so that people know where the resources are. We can't make an assumption that all of us know what each individual knows.
And a lot of these resources will end up on King's Snake. And so long as they get an app.
But you can't just point it to King's Snake. There are other resources out there as well.
What was your conclusion?
But my conclusion is that when you walk away from this, that we all know what needs to be done, we all know we need to be held to a higher standard. We know this needs to be done. We need the vehicle to get that information out there. Is there, do we put together a resource where everybody can go, this is fine. Do we take these care sheets and get them out at every show? Do we get, what's the next step? We know what to do. What's the next step to do it? What's the action plan to do this? This is what we need to move to.
Scott?
I think that's where we're headed, the Florida Reptile and Amphibian Association. Those best practices were an adaptation, an outgrowth of the National Reptile Improvement Plan. We adapted them to Florida, so they're somewhat specific, but not so much. The next step, sir, is that each member has to customize those into a set of standard operating procedures for their operation. Those go onto an application that is reviewed. In fact, by our former colleague, Linda's in mind, retired investigator at FWC, says, yes, this passes muster. This is also true for retail establishments. We don't have it for the hobbyists, but each hobbyist who wants to be a member must sign a code of conduct saying he will do this, this, and this. So we fan this out at a much lower level. If we can make this a go of this thing, if we can get critical mass, then I would love to be able to help export this to other states.
Yeah. Mark?
The one burden we have, and why we have to put our best foot forward, is that bad news is the best news for the media. They love the worst, the most
crazy, outlandish. And I'll give you a good example. And what the gentleman said is, if you believe it was true, not everybody knows what we all know. What I know is that Center for Biodiversity, PETA, HSUS all have non-pet agendas. That means no dogs and cats, too. Make no mistake. That's not what they publicize, but that's the idea. And what Mike was alluding to earlier, they don't want anybody to have dogs and cats. Now, see how many seniors are going to donate to them if they knew that. And I'll give you a great example. Years ago, when Florida was still working on the Reptiles of Concern program and about to restrict Burmese python ownership, there was a case, I think, in Dade County, Miami area, where some piece of garbage choked his kid or shook his kid and then realized he killed his kid and then shoved it in the face of his albino berm until the berm struck at it and then he called the police and the berm did. So now you got, a week later, you got the HSUS representative who has a PhD testifying that we need to do this now, we need to jump right in, we can't wait, people are dying. Okay, the chairman at the time was a retired police officer, Chairman Barreto, and he was a little more prudent than, sure, I'll do it because everybody's screaming. He said, well, there's always two sides of the story, and that's what his professional background had taught him. He said, well, we heard that story. Let's get the rest of the facts. What else have you got? And that's the kind of thing that you need from government, and that was really appreciated at the time because it didn't change the process one bit. And, of course, the facts of that case left the media real fast when it was, oh, there's some dirtbag versus the snake killed the kitten. And that's why when you do go out there, you do need to put your best foot forward.
Jeff, do you have...
2 months ago, there was an incident in Wausau, Wisconsin. And I bring this up because it shows you the impact of the media and the immediacy of the media and what one person and his actions can do. A gentleman decided to take his reticulated python to the local park.
Was it a reticulated python?
Took his python to the park to show off, and he made the local paper. And the next day, a city councilman started to implement a ban on boas and pythons in Wausau, Wisconsin. The very next day.
It actually circled the internet in a really bad way. It circled Facebook saying this was a stray. For some reason, I think it might have been a very high. It was a higher end, large, healthy looking retailer.
The problem with that is you're not going to be able to stop.
And you're not going to be able to stop every bad keeper.
The biggest issue was that reptile people circulated in the internet. And then they circled the HSUS press release on the internet. These bad guys, these bad guys, and can you believe? Each time you circulate, you give them credit.
This sounds like a joke. Did you hear about that mayor of Texas that was killed by the donkey?
Yeah.
I get to hear anyone try to ban donkeys.
Well, people are killed by cows in the year.
But it's not sexy like snakes. The press, if you haven't noticed, will run any story about sharks, snakes, tigers, or chimpanzees. Good or bad. Because it sells newspapers. And that's their business and that's their job. And whether it's true or not, or whether it impacts people or not, really not their concern. Their concern is to sell newspapers. We've got to give them less reasons to sell newspapers on their back.
Okay, we got one last question, Mark.
Just really for the industry. We just really want to say thank you to all the government agencies that were able to come out and really interact and help, and also to PJAC especially, and of course, most of all, to Jeff and his team, really, for I think doing a great show with all of us and organizing. It was outstanding, and hopefully something that will continue from year to year. Really, thanks, Jeff.
Yeah, thank you. Sure, yes.
On the issue of ethics, I would say this, and it's been referred to obliquely several times. There was a time, 20 years ago or whatever, that nobody would drop a dime on sulfur. And now I think it's such that you realize what you have at stake. You talk about the bad people that are doing it all down. somebody's really doing things wrong, I think you have an ethical obligation to let somebody know. If you can stop them yourself, great. I don't think you can walk away from them anymore. I'm not talking about people who slip up every now and then and who have a little minor technical glitch. There are a few people, and it's the minority. Those guys are killing the whole situation. I just think you can't leave them out there doing the wrong thing.
It is a double-edged sword. It is a double-edged sword, but in the end, I think it's better to get the person out of the community and out of the industry so that they can't wield that double-edged sword again.
We've got to clean our own house, or somebody else is going to do it for us.
That's right.
And